Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, who's in charge? Of what? Of anything? Are you in charge? Maybe your body's in charge? Maybe, who knows? We're going to ask those questions and climb deep into the big questions of life. Maybe you have some that we can help. And we'll see. So to do that, we're going to talk again with the author of Luminous Life, Jacob Israel Lieberman. Jacob, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Peter, it's a pleasure. I so much enjoyed our last conversation. I'm really looking into diving into this one.
Yes. And the big question is, you know, what is running the show? Of our bodies, of our struggles in life, is it all chaotic and, you know, we're just lucky that we're breathing?
You know, anyone that looks around at the workings of the universe has difficulty explaining it because Even though scientists don't use this word, they say it's miraculous how it all happens, that it's day over here and it's night over here, and everything gets a certain amount of light when it needs it to grow, and then it has time to regenerate at night, and the body seems to automatically do this and do this, and we grow to, you know, no one really knows. Not only how that occurs in the individual, but how that occurs in such a way throughout everything in this universe. So there's a congruency and coherency throughout. It's not just that things are working harmoniously within my body. That's a small miracle. The big miracle is that the congruency and coherence in my body is also in some way congruent and coherent with your body and all the other bodies and the plants and the animals and the planets and so on. In fact, you had mentioned the word astrology before. And here you're looking at something about the movement of the planets and their influence on us. And that's a beautiful sign of the fact that, as they say, as is above, so is below. That what is happening on one level is occurring on all levels, which means that what we think as individual things are in reality all, you could say, moving parts of one whole. And so when you ask the question, who's running things? Ultimately, there's an animating force that moves everything.
Together.
Right.
And that's the amazing part, is that there
together.
So many ways that we're in the middle of it thinking separate from that.
Well, you see, we have this illusion that Mother Nature is out there, we're in here, and we're observing it. In actuality, we are it. We are part of this whole thing. There isn't a subject and an object, even though the illusion appears that way. There's just a continually changing background. It's a very fascinating piece, because my sense is that when you really begin to look at that, you realize that we don't have any idea what's going on, and that all of our ideas are just that,
yes,
just fluctuating theories.
Yes.
And yet when the truth of that, the sense of being in a state of not knowing, when the truth of that really sets in, then we begin to understand why the Bible says the truth shall set you free, because there's a certain burden that is lifted when there's a realization of this thing that we're trying to describe, which is so difficult to speak about.
Well, let's also realize that all of nature, animals, vegetation, it all just is part of the ongoing force of life. And yeah, none of them question it the way we do. So we're, right, I think we're separate from the rest of nature in that we have these brains that don't understand this amazing, complex, wonderful universe that works together so well. And we struggle with, you know, finding out what is one, what is unification, what, how can we appreciate that we're part of the greater oneness. And if we did, then we would treat life totally different than humans do.
Yeah, we've, I think for millions of years, we've made an assumption that some of the mind stuff, the chatter, the monkey mind, the whatever you wish to call it, the result probably of a lot of neuronal activity that goes on inside. I think we have looked at that and assumed that that was us. I think we have been so identified with this internal voice or chatter that we believe it is us, that we've lost sight of something I mentioned last time, which is there is no awareness of that unless there is something that is noticing it or observing it or witnessing it.
Right, which is what we're talking about. But, you know, I'm thinking of now is that our DNA is not very well done. You know, we have very limited mind capacity, brain capacity, and DNA. And I think that's the big story, is that humanity is a very limited species and make trouble for ourselves as we always have. We are so inhumane as a society that it's ridiculous. And I think what we're talking about are concepts that everybody should grasp. But for the most part, our awareness, or not just the awareness, but our mind can't comprehend what the rest of the universe is integrated with.
You know, you're right. Trying to see the universe through a pinhole is exceedingly difficult. And that comes back to what I shared before. We believe this pinhole that we see life through, we believe that is actually what our capacity is. And that's just the capacity of a pinhole. There is an infinite capacity, which is the same capacity that a tree has and every creature in this universe has, which is the capacity that is inseparable from the intelligence of the entire universe that animates it. And that is why all of that runs so perfectly, because it doesn't interfere with it, because unless it's a domesticated animal, that when it has a feeling to move to the left and its owner yanks on the leash, giving it a whiplash, it soon develops the same thing we develop, which we call the mind. It develops some sort of an internal mechanism that intercedes between what is natural and what is normal, because It doesn't want to have its neck yanked again.
Right.
And so what I'm sharing is that when you look at animals in the wild, animals in the wild are animated by the same animating force that animates the planets. And so they're just moved through their life experience. My sense is that the pain, a lot of the pain that we experience is because, not because of something we're doing or not doing, it's something that's been conditioned into us that we literally don't know any better, any more than Pavlov's dogs can stop themselves from salivating when the bell is rung. We get conditioned not only through the ideas of our lineage, but we get conditioned very quickly when we come into this world. Keep in mind, in the first year of life, an infant's ideas about the world are 50% formed. By year two, it's 75%. Year three, 87.5%. By the end of year six, you're like 99.7%. That's why they call it the formative years. It's something gels into place. And even though the brain can rewire itself and can learn throughout a lifetime because of neuroplastic changes, that conditioning is very, very, very difficult to escape, because we think we can escape it by using the place from where the conditioning comes. And so it's like a dog chasing its tail. We never get out of the box. There has to be a recognition, as I said before, that everything we are aware of, especially the chatter and the ideas of the mind, we're aware of them because something that is undifferentiated, that has no preferences, if you will, is observing it. And it's the same state that a child is born in. If you look at an infant, no infant has any awareness of skin color, religion, gender, preferences. It doesn't have any sense that what you call its mother is in some way different from itself. We are hardwired to see from a place of no preferences. We come into the world with this inseparable connection with the animating force of life. All of this stuff that we call conditioning, so much of it occurs after we arrive. And that is the incarceration that many of us find ourselves in, the stress that we are trying our best to try to figure out how to come back to a different place, especially with the world moving so quickly now. It's becoming overwhelming.
Right. I don't think that there are any mistakes. I think humanity, we don't get born by mistake. Our souls choose our lives, I believe anyway, that we come in with a program. And the program is to struggle, because we come into this limited DNA, limited society, conditioning us in many difficult ways. And we try to grow through it and somehow find the light. And everybody is trying to solve life in one way or another,
right,
in good ways or bad ways. And in doing that, I think it's the purpose of life, is that our souls come here to work to find this light. And that's why they need to see optometrists like you, so they can see it better. But it's really about that. It's not a mistake to suffer.
By the way, I'm in total agreement with you. The suffering, in fact, someone said to me the other day when we were at a party, they saw my fiance and I, and they said, "The two of you really have a wonderful thing, don't you?" I said, "Yeah." And she nodded. And they said, "Yeah, it's really obvious." He said, "Do you ever get into it?" And we both laughed. I said, "Of course."
Yeah.
Everyone gets into it, because the into it is actually what catalyzes the out of it.
Right.
And so to come back to what you just said, there's no mistake in this process. We come in and through some interesting means, if we're very fortunate, we get some glimpses, some insights, some revelations, aha moments that bring us into conversations like this. It's nice to be on the same page.
Right. So it's really being able to hold life in that way, because we really want to be more in the flow and appreciate when we're not.
Right.
And, you know, recognize, like, for instance, when my son graduated from college, he was on a roll. He was an honor student. Everything was great. And he said, "Dad, you know, do you have any advice? Because I want to keep doing everything right." You know, and I said, "Well, I'll tell you that when I got out of college, for 10 years, I did everything wrong. And if I had done anything right during that time, you wouldn't be here today." So
yeah,
it all worked out. And so we really have to surrender and learn about ourselves. That's why we're talking, to help elucidate this difficult path that we all seem to be on, to maybe, you know, take some of the darkness away from it. I was remembering today a book that I interviewed the author of some years ago. It was called Lucifer's Game, and it was a novel about actually Lucifer, who shows up, appears in front of this guy and says, "Hey, let's be friends," and they start palling around. Everywhere Lucifer goes, he causes huge trouble.
Right.
You know, but it turns out that all the huge trouble he's doing is just bringing out the shadows in people that they need exposed so that they can correct their paths.
Right.
And so we really need to honor our own, you know, confusions and chaos, and realize that that's just our mind having an opinion about the flow.
You know, you said the story about your son doing the right thing or doing the wrong thing. And obviously, when you listen to the story, you come to an interesting realization. There's no right thing or wrong thing. What we, in the example you gave, the wrong thing brought the right thing together. And yet you couldn't do what you call the right thing.
Right, happened with all the wrong things.
Right. So something in life brought you home by a road your mind would have never taken. And yet you were brought home, and that really elucidates such an important point of how we find ourselves home, how we get home, regardless of what we think we do or what we think we don't do. That's something that there is some higher intelligence. And you spoke about the difficulties of life, and I often speak about the manure that we put on flowers to make them grow. And how good the manure is really related to how much that flower is going to be fertilized and grow. And yet when we think about that manure in our life, we think it's something negative. It's the wrong thing to have, as we say, shit in our life. Well, and yet it's something that brings forth very often the best of us.
There's a new medical discovery about fecal transplants.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is a very interesting thing. And I think that's why Advaita Vedanta speaks about choicelessness and unconditional acceptance. Because in reality, the mind cannot decipher the the road, it doesn't have a big enough lens to see enough to recognize the road that life takes us on in order to bring us to our purpose.
So what about, you know, those 10 years after my college days that I really made so many mistakes. It was embarrassing how troubled I was. And if I had at that point been told, okay, you're going to do all this, let's do it all intentionally, make all these mistakes intentionally, because after these 10 years, some magic is going to happen and you're going to end up with an amazing family. But you have to go through these 10 years first. So then how do you approach those 10 years of misfortune?
Well, you see, you said, how can we intentionally do this? Well, you know, again, to go back to part of our conditioning, a very big part of our conditioning is that this is right and this is wrong. And what's right is also based on some ideas. So it's not, we don't actually know. And then, of course, people say, well, I intend. Well, whose intention is it that we're experiencing? Is it our own intention, or is the intention of the universe coming through? Do we have the ability to override? Maybe for a few seconds, but that's about it from what I've seen. And so yeah. What I'm saying is the reason that we don't have that place where we say, can you intend to have this stuff happen that doesn't feel so good? The reason my sense is that that doesn't occur is that the duality of the mind, of the conscious mind, does not allow one to see a wide enough view of both of these possibilities. And I always say what someone really needs, which most of the time none of us see, is just outside our field of perception. We can't see that. That's just like we could never imagine that would bring us here, because our whole understanding of life is limited to looking through this pinhole.
And yet, the synchronicity and serendipity are there.
Yeah.
It says the whole universe works that way.
Right.
Amazing. For instance, our bodies, the miracles that go on in our bodies every second.
Yeah.
It's beyond, I can't even imagine how it was created. And it's magnificent. Right.
But it's magnificent.
Yeah. So then let's go beyond that to our consciousness, our soul, our intellect, and try to comprehend that we're living this same kind of life that's the right life. No matter how many mistakes there are in it, it's the right life. Our soul came here for it. It's making the choices through us because our minds can't think for themselves. We only can have thoughts. They only flow through us. So even though we have these egos that get in our way, we don't even know that we're in charge of our egos.
Let me say something about that. A friend of mine is a best-selling author and spent most of his life as a quantum physicist. His name is Amit Goswami. I'm sure probably aware of his name. And I had invited Amit to speak at a conference that I was president of, an energy medicine group. And we had a panel discussion. And it was Amit and Bruce Lipton and I can't remember the lady's name right now, and myself. And the moderator asked the question, where is the choice made? And Amit said, well, it's not us making the choice. He said, the choice is coming from non-local consciousness rather than local consciousness.
Right. Because if we didn't make
that... Let me just finish.
If we didn't make that choice that's coming from non-local consciousness, we'd be out of sync with the universe, and it's impossible to be out of sync with the universe.
So what came to me was, I hear what you're saying, but non-local consciousness is choiceless. Non-local consciousness...
Bring it into reality.
What I'm saying is, it doesn't choose, should I do this or should I do this? There's just one maximum potential, and that is what comes forth. And so the whole idea of something or someone choosing is something we really need to look at, because the words that we use, which are so familiar to us, to describe these processes may actually be taking us a little far afield. Eventually we'll come back again, but takes us far afield because we use words that may not actually exist in these realms. And so that's an incredibly important place, because in this state called non-local consciousness, we don't exist. There isn't an individual that exists within non-local consciousness. It's just an ocean, if you will.
Right, but it's an ocean of all kinds of frequencies that only take form through our awareness. And that's what quantum physics says. So we are bringing life into existence through our being. And we're going to actually have to stop the show very soon.
Oh, my God.
Time flew. And so we really just have to accept the fact that we represent a greater consciousness in the universe, that only our awareness makes it present. And then we can have all these opinions about it that almost don't count, except that they drive us forward, and we then, you know, perform what our souls came here for. So, but and what we really need to do is, I think, is just surrender to that greater flow in the universe. So, but Jacob Lieberman, any last words for a few seconds that we have?
It's an interesting thing. You said that quantum physics basically says we create whatever the form is. And I remember hearing once a very famous quantum physicist said, the world changes when God blinks.
Okay.
That literally when the mind and the eye are taken off of it is when the transformation occurs, which means when all the effort stops, when all the trying stops, is when the miracle happens.
That's great. So Jacob Lieberman, your book is Luminous Life. What website can people go to?
They can probably Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Most bookstores have it, but for sure Amazon and Barnes & Noble have it.
Okay. So we'll talk again because we have so much to say.
There's so much Hazarai in the world.
Yes, right. So thank you, Jacob.
My pleasure.
Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. And I can be reached at heartriver, heartriver.org. And I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening.